This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Davy Barker?
I definitely feel it. My brain is a very toasty warm today. I've been reading a book called Do Zombies Dream of Undead Sheep? Which is, of course, a takeoff of Do Robots Dream of Electric Sheep? But it's a neurobiologist's take on what a zombie brain looks like. And so I'm well-versed in the hippocampus and the thalamus and all this stuff tonight. This is what I've been drenched in. So, yes, my locus coeruleus is fabulous. It's humming like a... whatever hums, a top, I don't know, a motorcycle, what hums? But anyway, how are you doing?
I'm good. We should also mention that the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, and this allows reuse by anyone except governments. So you can learn more at BIPCOT.org. I'm good. I'm interested in your, what was it called?
It's called Do Zombies Dream of Undead Sheep.
What's that? Is it like? Because I've read "Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?" Is it like what?
Well, that's obviously where the title comes from. I mean, do androids dream of electric sheep? I'm sorry, I said robots earlier. It was androids. That's Isaac Asimov, if I remember right, and that's a work of fiction, right? Oh, it's Philip K. Dick. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a work of fiction. It's a novel or a short story, essentially. But no, this is not that. This is sort of like a neurobiology professor trying to mainstream his textbook by making it about something pop culture-y. And it really reads like a textbook where it's like, you know, you're reading about this thing and it's talking about like mirror neurons, and it's like, and know that the zombie is angry at you when like it would have been a different conventional textbook, but it's pretty interesting. I mean, I'm a fan of zombies, like lifelong, and maybe on life too. Who knows? And yeah, that's how that goes. What are you a zombie fan? A lot of zombie stuff is coming out of the UK recently.
Yeah, no, so, absolutely. No, big time. There's some things that people don't know, actually. Like, there's a scene, you know, there's a scene at the start of World War Z. I know this is slightly different, but there's a scene at the start of that, and it's where they're like, I think it's like a square, and, you know, the cars are all jammed, but it's done up to look like Chicago or something. Yeah, that's actually Glasgow. They actually filmed all that. Yeah, they filmed that here. Not a lot of people realize that. They took the big square in Glasgow, George Square, and they basically closed the place off for like so many weeks, and they made it look like it was America for some reason. For some reason, it was cheaper to make Scotland look like America than it actually was to film in America, bizarrely.
Well, that's not that unusual. I mean, like Los Angeles has been making Los Angeles look like everywhere else in the United States for ages, and now Walking Dead is trying to make Georgia look like Washington, D.C., or at least Alexandria. So changing the setting in a film is not that unusual. But I guess, can we do some vocabulary? I need to be educated about the difference between England and Britain and the United Kingdom. Like, what do these terms all mean? Because they mean something different, right? In my mind, they're all kind of the same thing, but they're not, are they?
No, not at all. Well, you know, you've got, basically, if you're the British Isles are England, Wales, Ireland, Northern Ireland, Scotland, but Britain, as in the entity that is called Britain, comprises England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, with the Republic of Ireland being separate and on its own. There's one parliament in Westminster in London that basically sets the big stuff for the whole country and most of the stuff for the rest of the country, you know, foreign policy and all that kind of thing. But then you've got the Scottish Parliament that's got a lot of, you know, it can set some of its own powers, but not the really big stuff. And then Wales has got like an assembly, which is like a smaller parliament, and so does Northern Ireland. They've got an assembly, which is again a smaller parliament, and they can like do smaller things. But all the big stuff is still in Westminster. That's what kind of sparked the whole Scottish independence referendum thing, because you know, people here wanted all the powers, you know, instead of just some of them.
So these aren't all names for governments, right? Like British Isles is a geographical term, not a jurisdictional term. And does that make sense?
Yeah, as a geographical term, okay.
So being from Scotland, it would be accurate to say that you were from Britain, but not from England, right? Is that correct?
You could say that. You could say that I'm from the British Isles.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's how it kind of comes up geographically, like British Isles. You could say that, but you would say that
I'm sure you'd rather Scottish. Say you're from Scotland, right? Just call it what it is.
No, but here's the thing, though. Like, this is a really big thing. Like, and especially like, right, the big football rivalry here is between like Celtic and Rangers, and here sports rivalry takes it to another level. They're both football teams, or soccer, as you guys would say. But the big thing is, it's not just that they hate each other because they're different teams. They bring in all this stuff. We were talking about this today. They bring in politics, religion. So, like, the Celtic fans are Catholic and the Rangers fans are Protestants. And the Celtic fans are, like... Well, this is the stereotype. I'm not speaking for everyone, but this is the stereotype. So the Celtic fans are supposed to be, like, sort of pro-IRA and things like that and sort of...
Well, I mean, the Celtics man, at least the Boston Celtics, is clearly an Irishman. He's sort of a leprechaun-looking guy.
You see a lot of people at Celtic games here wearing Boston Celtics stuff.
Really?
Hats, T-shirts. I see all the time.
Is it the same art? Is it the same, same team?
Yeah, apparently there was one time in the 90s that the Boston Celtics were going to do a deal with Glasgow Celtic so that they would sell Boston Celtics merchandise here and they would sell sort of Glasgow Celtic stuff in
like a sister city kind of thing. That'd be kind of
neat. Because
there are people who do that, sister cities. You know, I don't really know anything about sport ball. This has got to be like the least thing as far as topics go that I know anything about. Like, what did you say this was? Football? Soccer? Is this American football? Is this... real football?
Yeah, what is this? soccer, as you would call it. It's not so much that's the point. It's the point that they bring all this politics and religion into it, and it can be very, very nasty. That's why, for example, if Celtic and Rangers play each other, there has to be like a big row of empty seats, a massive row between the fans, and then two rows of police and stewards on each side to keep them away from each other, you know, to stop them from killing each other. That's kind of how
bad it sounds. Like in the Bay Area, we have Raiders fans and 49ers fans, and that's Oakland and San Francisco, and they're like right across the bay from each other. And they get into this weird, like, tribal mentality. They call it, like, Raider Nation. And, like, there's this, like, reputation that Raiders fans are sort of, like, loud and rambunctious and brutal and tip your cars over and throw Molotov cocktails. I'm exaggerating. But, like, this is the stereotype, right? And I have no idea whether or not it's true because I've never been to a Raiders game or a 49ers game in my life. And as I understand it, that's not real football anyway. I'm fascinated to hear you call it the Celtics. And not the Celtics, if I understand correctly, like the ethnic group or whatever, the tribal origins of the term would be Celtic, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So because, why don't you pronounce it Celtic? They're in the home of the Celts.
I don't know. It's a weird thing. We pronounce it Celtic, and that's where a lot of Americans get it wrong. They go, yeah, I was going to see Celtic, or, you know, they get, because you would think logically it would be Celtic, but for some reason it's pronounced Celtic. I just get no idea why. Always has been.
I always thought that was just a mispronunciation of the Bostonians. I as a person of mild Celtic background, although, as you know, it turns out I'm not of any Celtic background, I was always offended by the sports team, but it's funny to hear that called the Celtics even there.
Yeah, no, that's totally. It's
so. Do you follow sports? Do you go to these games? We're talking conventional football, meaning American soccer, right? That's the sport we're talking about.
Yeah, American soccer. Yeah, no, I used to when I was younger, but I don't anymore. It's not something I bother with. I don't know. I kind of find it strange that I did care so much about it. I used to really get into it for some reason. But it is kind of odd, and it's very, very collectivist. It's very us versus them and stuff.
Well, you know, our team is the best, and their team is the worst. I don't know which team that is. You know, that's funny. It actually, like, it seems shocking that it would be politicized or religiousized, but it actually kind of makes perfect sense. Because one of the reasons that I am so disinterested in sports is because it seems like a training ground for regional bias, and that's just always struck me the wrong way, right? Like, they're just the same. They're the same team fighting for the same reason and the same rules, and they're just wearing different colors. And I never understood, why do you root for the home team? Like, what is the merit of the home team? Especially when, like, especially in, like, high school, when I know those guys and there are a lot of them are jerks anyway. I don't want to root for them, but
I know it's. I don't know. It's just one of those. I mean, football isn't actually. Oh, sorry. I'll call it soccer for the sake of clarity.
Now let's call it football. I'm fine. American be wrong. That's okay. They'll get used to it. We're talking about the football team, the Celtics. And
it's actually, you know, it's much worse on the continent, like the fans and things. My brother used to live in Italy, and he lived there for a while, and he went to a Lazio versus Roma game, and this is like cages, you know, there's like sort of fences so that people are kind of actually big massive fences between them and the players, and he remembers someone like getting like punched and dragged out of his row and things like that. He said it was just absolute chaos, and my brother's got bright ginger hair, and there was one night they were playing a European game. Some European teams play each other in these cups, and they were playing Manchester United, so from England, and they said to my brother, put this hat on, this big daft Roma hat, because they were like, if they see you with ginger hair, you're in big trouble. And sure enough, that night, a couple of English guys did get stabbed by these Roma fans. So it was really kind of scary how extreme it can get, especially like on the continent, places like Poland and that as well. There's a lot of racist connotations, you know, and some football teams, you know, there's a sort of racist wing to them, if you know what I mean.
And see, I think that's pretty interesting, because like I struggle with this in the United States, that like people want to clump all white people together, and the fact of the matter is there are definitely sort of ethnic and racial differences between European tribes, right? So it's fascinating that you would still have inter-European racism in Europe.
Yeah, weird. We'll be back.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
Freedom Fiends. My name is Dan Green, and I am talking with Davy Barker. Davy, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. Excellent. Where did we leave off? We were talking football.
We were.
Something. You know, one of the more interesting things for me about England or the British Isles or the whatever you want to call the region, all the good zombie stuff is coming out of there now. Like, pretty much, like, ever since, I don't know if Shaun of the Dead was actually filmed in London. Do you know if it was? It looked like it was.
I think it was. I'm quite sure it was.
So, you have Shaun of the Dead is a British zombie film. And, like, not only, like, one of the best zombie films that I've ever seen, but it also broke the genre. It was sort of, like, self-referential and funny and whatever. And it was also the first one that I know of that was English. And then you had like 28 Days Later, and now there's these other shows. There's one that's showing now called In the Flesh, which is a really interesting one. It's set in I don't know what part of England it's in. But anyway, the interesting thing about it is it's post-zombie apocalypse. Like, they've found a cure, or a temporary cure, a treatment that makes the zombies sort of human again, sort of, but they're still dead, and they require this injection, and there's this... And it's essentially a show about racism. It's all the people who are alive who are discriminating against all the people who are dead and treating them like second-class citizens. And so... It's like this huge allegory for racism, which I just love, because that gets back to like the old like slave plantation zombie movies of the 50s, you know, like when it was largely an allegory about race.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. And I like a lot of the British zombie stuff as well. I mean, there was like 28 Days Later for me. That was just the scary thing about that is that's I don't know if it was done before that, but I think that's the first zombie film I saw where the zombies started running. And that's when it really started to freak me out, because, you know, like things staggering behind you isn't that bad. But when, you know, they start sprinting towards you, it's a bit, you know, it's much worse. And I love, is it not a bit of the start of that film that I always think about it? It's like the guy's woken up and he's like in a sort of, I don't care, spoiler alert, came out years ago, you should have seen it by now. The guy, he like wakes up in a hospital and he's like in London, there's nobody about anywhere. And it's that Irish guy, is it Cillian Murphy his name is? I'm quite sure it is.
I'm not sure, Murphy sounds Irish.
Yeah, but he's kind of wandering about, and like he sees a priest, and I always remember this bit, because like the priest is a zombie, but he doesn't realize, he's like, Father, are you all right, Father? And the priest lunges towards him, and he
hits slashes at him.
And then he's like, oh, I don't think I should have done that.
It's just, right.
And you're just laughing, but you're still not even sure what's happened, because it's still so early in the movie, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, right.
One of my favorite zombie films, yeah.
So it's funny, like, in the zombie culture or whatever, in the fandom of zombie movies, a lot of people don't count 28 Days Later as a zombie film. And really? The reason is because the infected in 28 Days Later don't actually die. They're a living person who is infected and then becomes rabid, and their heart never actually stops. Like, nobody comes up from the grave, nothing like that. So they say, oh, not a real zombie, it's just infected. I'm not one of these people, but this is one of the fights that people have. But yeah, running zombies, I mean, for sure, that's sort of the industry standard now. I mean, like, I don't think you could do a slow-moving, shambling zombie unless it was a comedy anymore.
No. Actually, we were, Katie and I, we were watching Zombieland, actually, earlier on tonight.
Running zombies?
Yeah, running zombies, absolutely. The thing I like about Zombieland is the rules thing, how like he explains the rules at the start and even all the way through.
Right.
When something happens, even if it's just like a little bit in the corner, a wee bit of text will come up like explaining that they just used one of the rules. And Woody Harrelson's character in that is just hilarious. It's a brilliant movie.
Woody Harrelson. Yeah. No, Bill Murray is in that as Bill Murray.
And he doesn't even last long. Okay, again, spoiler alert, this came out in like 2007, but like it's when he comes in and he's actually he's got his makeup on and he's all done up like he is a zombie, and he says to them, you know, I like to blend in, I like to go out and get things done. So he basically walks about kidding on he's a zombie all the time.
It suits my lifestyle is what he says. So I just saw this movie this week. Like, I just came across this movie, even though I think it came out in like 2010. But it's called Cockneys versus Zombies. Now, I don't know if Cockneys is a derogatory term or not, but it is now probably one of my top three favorite zombie movies ever. And I want to tell you guys why when we get back from the break.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.org. africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
Too busy talking to do a talk radio show. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm here, Davi Barker, with Dan Green from Scotland. And we were talking about zombie movies, and zombie movies especially filmed in the British Isles. And little known fact, we're making history here tonight. There is no Comrex involved in this radio broadcast. We have disembodied radio, and we are doing it entirely via Fiend Phone, which means neither of us is at the radio studio. We are both wired in via this series of tubes using the Fiend Phone software, and that's it. First time. So there you go.
History, man. But you were saying something about zombies and Cockneys, and I am interested.
Oh, this movie. Okay, so I just saw this movie. It came out in 2012. It's called Cockneys versus Zombies, and it's set in London. Check out this premise. Okay, here's the premise. There's the father, who's Alan Ford, this actor from like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, one of my favorite actors. And he has two sons who are trying to afford his retirement or whatever. And so they decide, you know what we got to do? We got to rob a bank. And so they rob a bank. And they go into the bank. They hold the place up. They pose as some sort of like whatever, construction workers or something. And they get themselves into like a standoff with the police, like hostage negotiation situation, right? And it's this tense, like it's a hostage situation, right? And at the moment where they're like, okay, we've negotiated all our demands, we're ready to come out, and they step outside, and the police are gone, and the entire city is on fire. And that's when the zombie apocalypse starts. So they avoided the outbreak because they were locked in a bank vault.
Oh, man.
It is a pretty good, narrative excuse to have firearms in the UK.
And, yeah, well, there you go.
That's sort of a big issue. 28 days later, they sort of famously didn't have firearms at first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the thing that I love about this movie is it is, okay, so first off, it's dramatic. It's like, it is a good action horror film, right? But it's also doing the Shaun of the Dead making fun of itself thing. Like, there is a walker chase scene, and I mean that literally. Like, there are walkers chasing an old man in a walker. Like, and it's so great. It's so funny. It's self-referential. There's a zombie who's a veteran, and so when they shoot him in the head, he has a steel plate in his head, and it doesn't work.
Oh, that's just brilliant. It was funny you were saying, like, is Cockney like a racial term? Because it's actually, you're okay saying Cockney. That just means you're from the East End of London, so you don't have to worry about that. Sorry.
Well, I guess I associate it with like a particular dialect of English or slang, or maybe even like a lower class or like an economic class. Maybe, I have no idea, but it just means you're from East London.
Yeah, it's a whole kind of culture. I'm not going to try and do the accent because I'm bad at it, but I used to work with a guy who was a Cockney, actually, but I didn't like him, but not because he was a Cockney, just because I didn't like him. basically, no, but it makes me think of people like, Vinnie Jones isn't a Cockney, is he? Nah, but like, no, I'm still thinking about football, because like football fans and zombies, because they're sort of... There's such a similarity when you think about it, how they're just all like, because there was a game here today, and it's just a friendly, just Scotland are playing Northern Ireland, and I live beside the National Stadium, because that was an intelligent decision, and you see them all coming up, and they're just like all in lines, kind of going, yeah, and that's all you can kind of hear, is this vague sort of, in fact, I can't think it's like either zombies or some kind of Nazi parade, if you know what I mean. Like, it's funny to think of like the
everyone in matching colors and common insignias and making the same hand gestures and singing at the same time songs and saluting the same flag.
It's kind of scary, actually. It's kind of weird. I mean, even the behavior's the same, you know. Like, I remember I don't know how we're back on football, but it doesn't matter. I remember going to Celtic games and they do this thing and you're kind of almost like expected to do it when it's like, we're so good, we don't have to even look at the game, you know? So like everyone in the stand stands up, turns their back on the game and like puts their arms around each other and then just basically jumps up and down, which seems
like
ridiculous.
Because they just assume they're going to win. They're doing the like classic Bond villain error there, aren't they? Like, yeah, isn't that when the other team makes a daring escape and like manages to win the day? Like,
yeah, it's like and it's also sort of mimicking the Celtic do a thing. It's a famous thing. They do this big kind of huddle before every game. So it's kind of the reference to that, but it's also a reference to sort of like, you know, we don't even need to watch this. We've got this, no problem, sort of thing. And it's kind of funny because if you just sit there, people will look at you and they'll think you're kind of odd. Even though what they're doing is kind of weird, they'll think you're the weird one for not doing it. Because I remember
standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Do you guys do like a Pledge of Allegiance or a Star Spangled Banner or something like that at sports games like we do?
You get, well, okay, right, so you get Flower of Scotland sang out before international games. So before every international soccer game, they do each country's national anthem. But it's not like a reverence thing. See, when you see the Scotland fans, it's more of a sort of guys in kilts, like big guys going, "Oh, Flower of Scotland!" And all this kind of thing, you know. With it's actually kind of brutal in a way. It's less sort of... it's because it's not one of those national anthems that's all kind of gentle and nice. It's more kind of aggressive. You know, it's about war and stuff. And everyone only knows up to like the second verse. And after that, then it's just da 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 da. Like,
well, they're all about war. I mean, the Star Spangled Banner is the rocket's red glare is about bombing people, right? Like, that's what the song's about. That's why we have fireworks on the 4th of July. We're emulating old war battles. Like, it's all about war. That's all it is. That's what sports is too, isn't it? It's a trench warfare where one guy has to like steal the flag in reverse. You're trying to get the football in the other guy's base.
But you know, because I went to meet Katie after work, and like I was saying, there was all these football fans kicking about here, and they were all walking about and. Like, we were just talking about this, and I was saying, like, I can't remember who said it, but I remembered someone saying before, like, can you imagine, like, the energy that they spend on that, you know, and their passion that goes into it, and you could take that and concentrate it on something that mattered, you know, we could get a lot done in a very short time, you know, because it seems like a lot of wasted energy on nothing, you know? I just don't get it.
Yeah, if you could just have them, like, you know, running on a hamster wheel, you could generate enough electricity to probably run London. I mean, there you go. You know, something I've noticed about sports fans, it's always struck me as really funny and really telling. If the local team wins, they say, "We won." But if the local team loses, they say they lost. So no matter what, it's like you socialize the victories and you privatize the losses, right?
But although I will make a defense for people calling their team "we," and here's why. Because
they're little, they're "we." Sorry.
You keep racially abusing me, Barker.
No, okay, what's the defense? Why?
Okay, here's the defense, right? Because the team always changes, but the fans support the team their entire life. The fans are the
ones
that pay the money.
That's even more of a reason not to say "we." I mean, come on. You're saying, like, it's "we" because it's the team in your geographic region and everyone on your team is from another town? Like, that's absurd.
Well, Actually, now in Scottish football, almost everyone on the team's from another country, which is funny enough. You know, like, we've talked about that in English and Scottish football in particular, there's players from all over the world now, you know, like, there's about three Scottish guys in each team, which is quite funny as well. It's international. I mean, I even know a guy who was only semi-good at football, and then he ended up getting like a gig at some small team in Spain, and he got paid a fortune, and he wasn't even that good. You know, so
that just makes it sound even more ridiculous to me. It's like you're essentially you could end up rooting for a team in which nobody is from your town. They just happen to be wearing the colors of your school or something.
But do you know what I mean, though? But then they would argue that the team is sort of. The team is not exactly just the players. The team is the whole thing, you know. It's the fans. Well, because the fans are the constant thing, you know. Even though there's different people that put on, say, the jersey.
No, the fans aren't constant either. They'll move to other towns and root for other teams.
That doesn't happen here, man. Here it's people are locked in here. I've never heard of anyone converting team ever in my life.
I think, you know, I worked in screen printing for like 10 years, and I'm convinced that the thing that the team really is the copyright. Because people get in a lot of trouble for printing team logos when they don't have it licensed from the right company. So I think fundamentally that's what the team is a monopoly on the printing of that logo. And everything is about popularizing that logo to sell merchandise, whether it's beanies or gloves or seat warmers or coffee mugs or whatever. It's that copyright, that logo, that fan base. That's what the team is.
It's a fair enough point, yeah. I get what you mean. It's funny how, like you say, like it never does, but it's also like it's always used as a rationale to drink regardless here, because if your team win, then you have to go and drink to celebrate, of course. And then if your team lose, you're depressed, so you have
so
to
you
obviously
have to
go
drink.
And drown your sorrows. And if you draw, then you're obviously a little bored, so you're going to have a drink because you're bored.
Yeah, because you're bored. Any excuse, right?
Yeah, so they can rationalize it any way they like.
There you go.
Oh, that's funny. I would love to take some people to football games and some Americans, because I went to a baseball game once, and the fans weren't segregated. This was only like a kind of small one in Canada. The fans weren't
segregated. How? Like by race or gender? What do you mean segregated?
Oh, no, by team. Sorry, I know that seems. by team affiliation. I didn't mean like, why are the white fans not
like,
over there?
Wow, this is not the Canada I'm familiar with.
But I've been told that like and like a lot of sort of sporting venues like in like the US as well and stuff, the fans aren't completely segregated by like lines of police. Because here, that's just normal here for there to be lines of police between each set of fans. You know, that's just because if you didn't have it that way, it would be chaos, you know? You'd have a bloodbath. It would be like the 1970s again.
They do that here. I mean, there are games where there are riots and they sort of do a preemptive police thing. I know, like, Mardi Gras every year, there were police set up in downtown San Jose, like, ready for people to riot. So, I mean, anytime there's masses of people and alcohol, there's usually a cop waiting around to arrest somebody. Or a DUI checkpoint or something. And we'll have more after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're talking to each other.
And neither
I'm
Dobby
Barker, and I'm here with Dan Green. I unearthed a scandal during the break. Dan, apparently you've never seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I've never seen it, no. Never.
I find that shocking, especially for someone who's a fan of Army of Darkness. I mean, they're not really related or anything, but they're that same kind of so bad they're good kind of movie. So...
No, I've never seen it. I mean, I've obviously heard about it and stuff, and people have People have told me about it, but I don't know why I've never seen it. I mean, Army of Darkness was just so horrendously bad. It was great, if that makes any sense. I mean, it was even, they like superimposed a castle on what clearly was like a desert or something, but was supposed to be like England or something like that. It was kind of
right.
Made no sense, you know what
no,
I mean?
It didn't make any sense at all.
Like, it just made absolutely no sense. And it's just, even the lines, he's got the shotgun and he calls it his boomstick, and what a great in
the, you know, the funniest line. Thing about the shotgun is, if you watch it, like, there are entire, like, on, like, the movie goes on, and it's not on his back, and it's not in his hand, and it's not in his belt, the shotgun is nowhere, and then suddenly he pulls it out, and he shoots it, and it's like, where did this shotgun come from? Like, the continuity in that movie is so terrible. There's, like, the smudges on his face change, the rips in his clothes change, like, it's pretty terrible, but it's a classic, you know?
Oh, absolutely, because, I mean, well, the Evil, obviously it's the third one of the Evil Dead sort of series, and the Evil Dead 2, for me, is just a remake of the first one. You know, it's just like, he got more money.
Yeah, it's totally unclear. Like, it's either a remake or a sequel, and it's very unclear which. But if it's a sequel, then it's a stupid character, because he goes out to the same cabin and does the same thing.
Or maybe it's happening in a parallel universe, like an alternate reality, and we just don't get it on that level.
It's like, so Evil Dead 1 was supposed to be a scary movie, and it was so campy and terrible that it was a comedy. And they're like, okay, it's a comedy. Let's try again. Evil Dead 2. We're gonna do it this time. We're gonna make it scary. And it's still funny. Like, it's still so terrible that it's hilarious. And I'll swallow your soul. Like, it's like the Muppets go to hell. And
I've never heard it described that way.
And then Army of Darkness, I feel like, is when the producers finally realized, no, we're not making horror, we're making comedy. And once they embraced it, it was like all the pieces came together. It was a phenomenal film. And I don't know why it would be controversial that people wouldn't like it, but apparently you're telling me people don't like it.
A lot of people I've met, like, think it's terrible. I just think that it's lost on them, to be fair. I think that's what the problem is. There's a lot of
some people just can't appreciate art. I think that's what it that's what it comes down to.
And that is true art. although, what's that guy's name? The guy that made it? Because I remember, I think he was like a George Bush supporter, that guy. I seem to
the
remember
actor?
Reading about
Bruce Campbell?
No, not Bruce Campbell, no. The guy that actually made the movies.
I got no idea.
I can't remember his name, but he was, I remember, like, he was, like, a George Bush supporter.
Yeah. You know, the original was a student film called Within the Woods. Have you ever come across that one? I'm not even sure where to get a copy of that. I should go looking for it. But, I mean, like, that, it put the Necronomicon on the map. Like, people know what that book is because it was the Evil Dead series. Did you see the remake, the 2013 whatever thing?
I didn't. No? I've got to confess that I did not.
Well, it is not in the vein. It's not a comedy. It's like they got together and they finally made the Evil Dead they were originally trying to make back in the 80s.
So,
and
like, third time lucky.
Yeah, right. So it's actually kind of a scary horror film, and it's actually sort of terrifying and actually, like, made me jump and made me cringe quite a few times. But so it's good, but it's not Army of Darkness good. But the thing about go ahead.
So I was gonna say, I feel like, just, you know, we haven't mentioned that Barack Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. So I'm saying that for our American listeners, just so they know where we are.
Yeah, and we're also obligated to say that at least once per hour.
Yes, David Cameron is a ridiculous human being.
Is he human? I thought he was like a mole or something, a reptile.
I think he's a reptile.
He's not a robot.
He comes across that way, but a lot of British prime ministers do, to be fair. So that's nothing new.
All right, we'll be back in hour two. And until then, let's take a trip to the market. Worms.
Yes, let's worms. We'll be right back.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Indoctrination Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Remember, Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Yes. How's it going? How was your break? I hope you feel refreshed.
Yes, it was good. Yeah, I feel very refreshed. And for anyone who doesn't know, Davy and I have had a mutiny. We've decided to fire Michael Dean. He has now been fired, and we are in charge. It's a coup.
There you go. We are kidnapping the show.
We have.
Going renegade. Sailing it into the abyss of... how do you steal a radio show? It's not really a thing.
Just when you brought up ship references, I thought of A Voyage of the Damned for a little bit there.
You know, for me, it was Monty Python. I was imagining like the beginning of The Meaning of Life with the like... are you a Monty Python fan?
I am.
Do you remember? I think it's The Meaning of Life. It's a corporate hostile corporate takeover, and they're all pirates with ties wrapped around their head. And
is that not when they have the song about how they're sailing on the vast accounting sea? I love that. That's not my favorite Monty Python film. I thought The Holy Grail and The Life of Brian were way, way better. That's when they were really at their peak.
Yeah. Well, those are like clear narratives, right? The Meaning of Life is like, it's like a variety show. There are moments in The Meaning of Life that I think are the most memorable and probably can't be said on the radio, but I think when it comes to the narrative, yeah, the Monty Python's The Holy Grail is probably the pinnacle of Monty Python.
I would probably say so. I mean, The Life of Brian was banned here for a number of years, actually, because it was considered to be sacrilegious, you know, but it brings up a lot of really good themes.
It ran afoul of their blasphemy laws.
Yeah, not really. It was banned in the cinemas here. Yeah, it was for a while.
So why isn't the Holy Grail blasphemy?
Exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. It's, you know what it's like. It's arbitrary, isn't it? But it strikes more of a nerve. But I always think of the bit in The Life of Brian when they're all they think he's the Messiah, they're all following him around, and like one of his shoes
follow
comes
the gourd.
Off.
Follow the shoe, follow the gourd.
And then they split, it's like they split into two camps because one of them goes, he wants us all to take off one shoe. And then the other one goes, no, he wants us all to collect shoes in a big pile. And then they like split off into two factions like straight away. And it's just totally stereotyping like the way like a lot of religions do that. Like they just seem to splinter off over things, and then you get into so many different sects. I don't even know how many types of Christianity there are.
Oh, probably as many as there are Christians.
Probably. it's like types of anarchism.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, to some extent, isn't that the point of blasphemy? Like, the point of blasphemy is to point, or at least, like, satire. Let's call it satire. The point of satire is to point out these sort of foibles and idiosyncrasies and sometimes just straight-up ridiculousness of this sort of infighting. You know what I mean? And it's like, if no one's pointing it out, then it's allowed to continue. Yeah. So, I was a fan.
Absolutely. And I just love as well, you know, they show up as well when they have the two groups, you know, the Judean People's Front and the People's Front of Judea.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the names of those groups. They're totally different. Communist anarchists and anarcho-communists are totally different.
Completely different. There's no correlation. And syndicalists, they've got nothing to do with them either, you know.
Yeah, there's a whole anarchist commune thing in Monty Python's The Holy Grail. You know, that actually was my first lesson in politics when I was a little kid. The come witness the violence inherent in the system. I looked at my, I think it was my stepdad, and I said, "What does that mean? like, what is the violence inherent in the system?" And it's like, "Yeah, it really is. It's help! I'm being repressed."
Oh yeah, because that's in The Holy Grail. When he talks to the little peasant guy, and he's talking about so funny. He's basically talking about syndicalism, isn't he? I think
they called it that. They called it an anarcho syndicalist commune.
Yeah.
He says, "Who lives in that castle?" He says, "No one lives there." Or an anarcho syndicalist commune. We have a bi-weekly meeting, and he starts going into the bureaucracy of what an anarcho syndicalist democratic collective is. And Arthur's just like, "I have no idea what this guy's talking about, bloody peasant." Like,
what was so funny is I'd seen it before, but I'd never really sort of picked up on that until I watched it later on. And it's one of those films, like, they make stuff that you pick up on later on. Even the series were great. Did you ever hear of a show called Fawlty Towers?
I've heard of it. I don't think that I've seen it, though. What's it about?
It's basically just, you know John Cleese, the big tall one from Monty Python? When Monty Python, I can't remember what they were doing. I think they were filming something. They were staying in this hotel, and the guy that ran the hotel was crazy. And this gave John Cleese this idea. So he made this comedy called Fawlty Towers, and he's basically a guy called Basil Fawlty. And he's got this tiny hotel in, like, I think it's Torquay, which is, you know, in what they call the English Riviera. Riviera is a slightly generous term, but let's go on. Okay. But it's like a small hotel, and he runs this hotel, but he's basically, you know, he's an idiot and he goes off his head all the time. And it's one of those weird 70s British comedies that, like, a lot of people can really get it, because it's just great situational comedy. And it's still so popular that at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival here, which is a really big deal, because you get the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, you get people, like, especially comedians and things from all over the world doing shows, and it's where a lot of people get their start. They do, like, I've never been to it, but I want to go. They do a thing where it's basically a Fawlty Towers dinner. So, like, you go and you have dinner, but there's actors playing basically the characters, because in Fawlty Towers they have, like, a Spanish waiter who doesn't understand English, and then you've got John Cleese as the manager, who's, like, basically insane and can't talk to anyone. So you've got all these different characters, but you actually get to have dinner while they, you know, basically do a show around you, which I think is brilliant.
That's pretty cool.
I like the idea. I like,
you know,
concept.
It's funny, like, I watched Monty Python at an age before I had any real understanding of national borders or nationalities or countries or nation states or any of that. And so I had no sense that a British comedy troupe was different than an American comedy troupe or whatever. I just felt like it was like watching humans being funny. You know what I mean? Like, and I didn't feel like there were anything other than what I was. And it's amazing, looking at it now, how much of the entertainment that I was into as a kid and growing up was English and British and not American.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what the correlation is. Is there a modern British comedy that people would be familiar with? I'm not sure that there is. Like, do you remember Are You Being Served? Did you ever watch Are You Being Served?
I've seen it only once or twice. That was an older one, wasn't it?
It was. It was like a department store. But they were allowed to swear in that show in ways that they couldn't on American television. And so that was what made it special for me as a little kid.
Because it's funny, because, like, you do see, like, I think you sort of see, like, the surreal comedy thing really picking up with Monty Python. And then there's other shows that are like alternatives to, like, American shows. So obviously in America you've got Scrubs, which is a kind of surreal obviously surreal hospital based comedy. But here you've got a show called The Green Wing, which is the same, except it's more surreal, it's more vicious, it's less fun, if you know what I mean, because, like, there's murder in it and things like that. And I don't want to ruin the end of The Green Wing. Usually I don't mind spoiling stuff, but I don't want to ruin the things that happen. But there's things like murder and stuff in it, so it's a kind of, like, it's like Scrubs, but more extreme. I would say, and weirder. And you, so you do get things like that. But I remember saying to someone here, a friend of mine, I said, oh, you should watch this thing, The Green Mile. It's like Scrubs. He went, oh, what is it, like another one of these British shows that's like the American show, except everybody's uglier? <'Cause that's> And in a way, he's right.
Cool. I don't know about not- that. What are the parallels? So, I don't know that there are necessarily parallels of American and British shows that are really that similar. Like if you look at In the Flesh, it's really not like Walking Dead. It's a completely different zombie show, mm-hmm. right? So what would you say are the parallel shows? Like where there are there sets? Is that what you mean?
Well, if we're talking parallel shows, we could talk like, well, let's talk straight parallels for one. Did you ever see The Office? Either version, so obviously that started off as
The Office
British
was
show.
was a British show. I didn't know that. Yeah. All right, that's probably a direct parallel.
Yeah. So, well, what's interesting is this, right? So it ran for like, I think it was only two series. It didn't run long, but it was quite a unique show at the time because it was one of the first sort of documentary kind of comedies. It was Ricky Gervais did it, you know.
Wow, I pulled up pictures of it. It looks like the same show. Like, the set looks the same.
But here's the interesting thing, right? Some of the characters are the same, but some are non-compatible in the US version, because it's obvious that, like, okay, so there's, like, Dwight is based on Gareth Keenan, and then obviously the two bosses, Michael Scott and, you know, Ricky Gervais's cat, David Brent, they're both the same. And then obviously Jim and Tim are roughly the same. But then you have all these characters, the US Office, because the US Office, I watched it all actually and it ran longer. You have all these characters like Creed and Stanley and things, but they're not compatible. So what I like about that is, because I thought I wouldn't like it, I thought this would just be a worse version of a great show that I like. But what I found was the fact that they started off being very similar to the British Office, but then they started to branch out, make it different, like I said, add characters that were non-compatible, and they actually took it to different places. So I actually ended up enjoying the US version.
That's cool.
Yeah, but I thought,
you know, there was briefly talk of an American version of Doctor Who starring Michael Jackson.
No.
It would have been really weird.
I don't think my brain could handle that, to be honest. I honestly don't. It would be too much.
I mean, Doctor Who is a phenomenal show for that matter. I mean, I haven't watched it since I was a little kid, but the premise is fantastic. To like build into the premise a reason to replace actors is like the surest way to have like to promise longevity for a show.
I know what you mean. It does make a lot of sense.
Do you watch it? Is it still the same series?
It's still Doctor Who, and I know the guy who plays him now. Oh, he's quite a famous actor, Peter Capaldi. But I never watch it. I'm not that interested, to be honest. I watched it as a child, but no sense.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. We'll be right back. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends, this is Dan Green, and I am talking with Davy Barker, and we've been talking about Well, we've been talking about adaptations of British shows for US television. And David, you didn't actually know that Shameless was a British show for years before it was adapted for US TV.
No, I didn't. I kind of feel like Americans are stealing British television now. Like so many of these shows have, they're originally British, and I'm like, what? We can't come up with our own ideas anymore. Like,
are we outsourcing our ideas to Britain?
I mean, really? Like, writers are running out of ideas. I mean, that's why all movies are comic books now, and they're comic books. There's a go. Can't come up with new ideas anymore.
I know. I find that.
Who needs new ideas?
But that's happened a lot. I mean, like, did they not remake Spider-Man, even though they'd only made it, like, what, not 10 years
ago? Oh, yeah, there's like three or four versions of Spider-Man now. That's the weird thing, too. Like, they just keep doing the beginning of Spider-Man. Like, why don't they just continue the series? You know, there's other developments in his life besides what happened with Mary Jane or whatever. But that's how it goes.
Yeah, I get really bored with stuff like that. Even when they drag on like horror films, I mean, that's the notorious one for it. You know, you get horror films like Halloween that never, ever, ever seem to end. They just seem to constantly drag on. You know,
yeah. For me, it was Nightmare on Elm Street. There's like 50 of those movies.
although they did make it interesting. Did you see the one when it was supposed to be the cast themselves as real people, except Freddy was now stalking them?
No.
Like in their dreams.
Became Freddy Krueger? Is that what you mean?
No. It was like Freddy was real. So it's like the cast, but like they were dreaming about Freddy, and then it turned out that Freddy Krueger was real and he was coming after the cast members in their own lives. Like, I think it was Wes Craven's New Nightmare. I think it was that one. I think that's
okay.
What they called it.
I never saw Wes Craven's New Nightmare. Like, essentially, like, once I became an adult, I stopped keeping up with them. But I did see the remake. The remake was weird. There's a sense in which the new Freddy Krueger, the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, ruined the old movies for me, because it was so clearly about pedophilia, and that made me go back and look at the old ones and realize, oh, the old ones were always about pedophilia. Like, there was always this like weird subtext of like sexual content to the violence in this film, and I just never picked up on it as a kid because I was a kid, and now I know, and it's ruined my childhood.
Oh man, no, I know what you mean. And there's always those, do you know, like in the weirdest thing I think in any horror series, maybe it's not part of the series and I'm missing the point, but you know, you've got the Halloween films and you obviously get Mike Myers who's the serial killer.
Yeah.
What's up with the one that's like Halloween 3, but it's nothing to do with Mike Myers, and it's just like the toys are going to kill? Is it not? No, it's the pumpkins or something are going to kill all the children, or it's something weird like that. But it's nothing to do with like Mike Myers or anything like that at all. Do you know what I'm
I don't know.
About?
I didn't watch the Halloween story. I didn't watch the Halloween series or whatever. I've never actually seen one.
Have you not?
But yeah, they get weird. They always do. It's like, that's when they do like Freddy versus Jason or something bizarre like that, right? Like, they've run out of ideas and they're just trying to get some butts in the seats, and that's how it goes, right? It's did you ever watch Child's Play?
So, oh, yeah. Those Chucky films.
The Chucky actually, films.
I didn't watch the Child's Play ones. I watched the ones after it with him. You know what I mean?
What do you mean the ones after it?
Like, you know, the ones like, you know, Bride of Chucky and whatever the other one was, like Seed of Chucky.
I think I'm thinking of Seed of Chucky. Is that the one where Bride of Chucky and Chucky have a child and they're arguing about whether it's a boy or a girl?
yeah
That is the weirdest movie ever. I saw that like maybe 6 months ago, and I'm like, this is so surreal and weird. Like, I can't even really like piece together if this is a comedy or a horror or what is going on here, because they're arguing about it's bizarre. It's like, they're disconnected or they're turned off, and then they're made into puppets for like a horror. Like, there's all this self-referential stuff in these horror movies eventually. I guess that's a thing. But, yeah. The kid, I forget the kid's name, but, it's a boy or it's a girl, and it's all very vague, and I don't know. It was very strange.
Yeah. It's very ambiguous, and like, Aye, and then like the kid sounds like it's got like a English accent, which is kind of weird.
Oh yeah,
as well.
He does.
Yeah, and it's really
why
bizarre.
Why would that be?
I know it's so odd, and yeah, I know what you mean. Though those films are like really strange. It's like black comedy at its best. You know, I put them up there with one of my favorite black comedies. If we're going there, was like, do you ever see Idle Hands? That was one of those great films.
That sounds really familiar. Why do I know that name? What is that about?
It's about like if I'm remembering right, the guy's hand gets possessed and it starts taking over him basically, and he can't control himself.
Oh, it was like it was the Army of Darkness thing for like the whole film, right?
Yeah, basically.
Like my hand went back, and then I jumped off at the wrist. I did see this movie. I liked this film when I was a kid.
Yeah,
it was Seth Green was in it, right?
Yep. Him and the other guy are like two of his mates, and for whatever reason they get killed, and then they show up again, but they're dead, but they're sort of now undead, so they're sort of like zombies, but coherent. And their explanation for why they're back is that, you know, there were maybe these kind of lazy stoners, and they said, go towards the light, but we couldn't be bothered because it was really far, so we just came back.
I haven't thought about that movie in years. I definitely saw it when I was a kid, though.
Black comedy at its finest.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks, and you are listening to The Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends. And we're back.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Dan, do you ever watch Gremlins?
I've seen it before, not for a long time, but I have seen it.
There's like two or three, I guess, films in the franchise of Gremlins. It was one of my favorite things when I was a kid. And I was looking at the Wikipedia page, and there's a subsection for allegations of racism. And it's short, so I just want to read it. Since its release, some people have criticized Gremlins as being culturally insensitive. Some observers have argued that the film presents gremlins as African Americans. In Ceramic Uncles and Celluloid Mummies, Patricia Turner writes that gremlins are, quote, reflective of negative African American stereotypes in their dress and behavior. For example, they are shown devouring fried chicken with their bare hands, listening to black music, breakdancing, and wearing sunglasses in the dark. For shame. Editorial comment there. A style common among African American males in the 80s. I don't know what to make of this. Like, I watched this at a time when, like, this was not even on my radar as a thing.
I've never heard this.
I don't know. Like, I can remember examples of movies in the 80s of white people breakdancing, and there was some movie that was about Little Monsters. There was a big deal made out of wearing sunglasses at night in Little Monsters. And it was because the main character was transforming into a monster gradually, and so he was becoming sensitive to light. And that was Howie Mandel as the monster in that one. But I don't know. Do you see this? Do you get this? African-American stereotypes and gremlins? I'm not sure that this is tracking with me.
No, not really. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, it's, you could, I mean, you can look at different things and you can read a lot into pretty much anything, you know, like how many times have you seen people that make these sort of conspiracy websites and they read way too much into practically nothing. But it is interesting that people bring this up. But although, what are the rules? Is it not? You can't get them wet, and there's another one, isn't there?
Like, you can't feed them after midnight. If you feed them after midnight, then they turn in. They turn from mogwais into gremlins, and if you get them wet, they multiply.
Right. If that was true of African Americans, which it's not, then maybe.
Thanks for the clarification.
So I think it falls down there. You know.
I remember the fried chicken thing. The fried chicken thing was because the kid bought chicken for himself for dinner, and then the mugwai, one of them pulled the plug out of the clock, and so he thought it was before midnight, and it wasn't. And then the mugwais got a hold of the fried chicken. I mean, that was a white family eating KFC. That's what that scene was. Like, you can't just call it an African American stereotype because it's fried chicken. I ate fried chicken when I was a kid, and I was from a white family, so.
Well, there you go.
And as far as like black music, I mean, like, it was a party. What would you rather they had played in the 80s? They had the best music. That's what they had.
Yeah, you know.
I don't know what to make of this. Gremlins was a weird movie, and it got weirder and weirder as it went along.
Yeah, if people do read a lot into these kinds of things, and I can't say like, oh, I never do it, because in our show we spent an hour and 40 minutes picking apart Alice in Wonderland for no reason other than we thought it would be fun, which actually it was. And that is a really, really, there's something wrong with that book, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then he had an interesting relationship with Lewis Carroll, I'm talking about, with children, which was a bit, it was a bit strange.
Yeah, as I understand it, Alice in Wonderland was written as a love letter to his niece, because he was kind of in love with his niece in an inappropriate sort of way, if I'm not mistaken.
Do you know what's so strange? There's these two arguments, and one of them is that, like, because he would, like, do paintings and take pictures of, like, children sometimes not really wearing anything, but, like, sort of covering themselves. And some people say that's because he was a paedophile. But some other people say it's not because he was a paedophile. Some people say that was actually like something people did in Victorian times. It was considered like art. Like, there's even some people that argue that there was like Christmas cards that had these kinds of images on them in Victorian times. It was just considered art. It wasn't considered pornography. So there's these two things, but it's one of those ones where nobody will ever know. You know, there's no way, but there is a lot of creepy aspects to the man's life. And what a lot of people don't know as well is, like, Lewis Carroll wasn't his name, it was something else. And under his own name, he published loads of work about mathematics and logic and things like this.
Weird.
You know, and he was like an Anglican deacon as well, which is a kind of almost a priest, I believe is the best way to put it. There was a lot of weird, interesting aspects to his life. But
Lewis Carroll is the Screwtape Letters, isn't it? Didn't he write the Screwtape Letters?
Did he?
No, that's C.S. Lewis. I'm sorry. I get those two mixed up.
Yeah. Katie, as in my wife, she collects copies of Alice in Wonderland. She's got loads of them. She's got ones from like the 1912s, you know, and things like that, the 20s and 30s. She loves it. And she's got them all for really good prices, you know, like at all these weird, you know, charity shops, secondhand shops, and things like that.
Yeah, somewhere in my family, there is a complete first edition of The Wizard of Oz that my grandmother left to my mother or my uncle. So it's still around somewhere. I saw it when I was a kid. My parents read it to me. And that's another interesting, weird set of books where, like, things just don't make any sense. It's like somebody just decided the way to write children's books was to drop acid and run around in the forest for a while or something. There's like a whole generation of that.
And then there's people that argue that there's economic meanings in it. I can't remember the full argument, but I've heard people say about the yellow brick road represents gold and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've heard of all these.
I know this one. So let me see if I can do this. So the Tin Man is the industrial class, right? The factory workers, because it's steam and whatever mills and stuff. And the the straw man is mm-hmm. The farming class, right? Because he's, you know, the farmers of America or whatever. And mm-hmm. the lion, what is the lion? I don't know what the lion is. But yeah, there's supposedly this like three economic, oh, maybe he's the banker. I think he's the banker. Uh-huh. Or he's the honest money. He's the original, the pre-Fed bank when banks were good and innocent or whatever. He's the capitalist, right? The wizard is the Federal Reserve. See, mm-hmm. because he's promising people things that don't really exist, and so if I remember right, in the book, the shoes were made of silver, not of ruby, but they changed it to ruby because in the film it transfers from black and white to color, and it's just a very dramatic transition mm-hmm. from black and white to red ruby. Black and white to silver is no transition at all. But that was supposed to be about gold is like literally that's that, you know, America is so rich the roads are paved with gold. That's what they used to lie to immigrants about. And then silver is sort of you're walking around money, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's your shoes. I don't know. I've heard this before. I don't know if it's true or not. I like that sort of conspiracy theory stuff. But then what is everything? What's the point? Well, what are the flying monkeys? What's the witches?
Oh yeah.
What's the what's the rest of the metaphor? I have no idea.
I know it's interesting because I watched something once and it was a kind of mini sort of documentary that Jan Irvin had done, the guy that runs Gnostic Media, and he was drawing parallels between like Christmas and like shamans and like magic mushrooms, because you know they used to pick them. When they used them for like, they would give them out to like the villagers, and they would like put them on a tree, like a fir tree, to dry. So, and apparently some of the earliest sort of some of the very earliest ornaments you get for Christmas trees were little mushrooms, interestingly. Also, he would use a sack to collect them at first before leaving them to dry, the shaman. Sometimes the houses were so snowed in, because we're talking about sort of like Siberia, so apparently he would go down the chimney sometimes to get in to reach people. So there's all these weird parallels between magic mushrooms, like a shaman, and shamanistic practice, and like the idea of Christmas, which is, you know, it could just be pure coincidence, but it's just quite funny to theorize about things like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Once I learned about psychedelic mushrooms, the game Mario Brothers never looked the same again. I mean, think about that, right? Like a couple of plumbers eat some mushrooms, they're sucked into a drain that's run by giant turtles that steal a mushroom princess, and they shoot fireballs, and like it's such a bizarre, like if you think about the narrative of the Mario Brothers, it's one of the most surreal. It's right up there with Alice in Wonderland and the Wizard of Oz as far as bizarre goes.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. And I got reinterested in Alice in Wonderland when I started listening to psychedelic music, and you know, there's that Jefferson Airplane song, White Rabbit, and yeah. it's very obviously about LSD, but it's obviously with all the Alice in Wonderland references, and that's what got me more, and then that became sort of part of the 60s, like, counterculture scene in a big way. Like, we've got a poster from some movie in the 60s on our wall, and it's called like Alice in Acidland, and it's like, watch a young girl lose her mind and all this kind of thing. It's one of those on the demon LSD, you know, those kind of posters. I love those. We've got a bunch of them. We picked up one actually when we were in Amsterdam, and it's like a picture of a girl, and then you've got like the devil, and he's holding her, and she's got a joint, and it's like, marijuana, the smoke of hell, and it's like, watch this girl lose her innocence and all this kind of thing. Kind of like the Reefer Madness stuff. I love them so much.
You know, she does go into the woods and fall asleep under a tree, which is not a terrible place to find mushrooms. And yesterday we were talking about lepofuology, which is the study of the correlation between bunny rabbits and UFO abductions. And the white rabbit in Alice in Wonderland is sort of, it's one of the central figures in lepofuology, this idea that there's this trope of the bunny rabbit that appears and takes you away on some sort of like fantastic journey, right? And Alice in Wonderland isn't the only one. But it's one of the more famous ones.
See, I had this idea, and maybe this is going way, 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 way too far into it, but you know how Alice in Wonderland, when she falls down the hole, it takes a long time in the book. There's a lot of pages to it, and it seems like it takes a while. He was an Anglican deacon, so he was quite a committed Christian, supposedly. I don't know the man, but apparently Lewis Carroll. So then, you know, you have what's a very important theme in Christianity is like this idea of the fall, as in there was a perfect Edenic existence, but then something happened, like i.e. symbolized by the tree, and then humanity and God were separated, you know. And then that immediately, when I thought of him being a religious man, that I just thought, is this, could this be something to do with, as in the fall? Could he be referring to that, or am I just way too far into it? You know, I'm not sure.
Well, the really overt thing, if you want to talk about Christian symbolism, you fall into a hole long enough, you land in hell, right? I mean, isn't that the idea? So is that what Wonderland is?
Yeah, because that's, it's so interesting. And then, did you ever see the Tim Burton remake of it?
Is that the one with Johnny Depp?
It is, yes.
It's pretty weird. Yeah, I did see it.
Because it's not the tradition, it's not the story, it's like they've taken it forward, so Alice is older.
Oh, and the Mad Hatter's suddenly Scottish, right? He like goes into mad Scotsman frenzies.
He goes like, spoon! Yeah, but it's meant to be like, it's called Underland, not Wonderland, which is interesting.
Well, there you go, it's Underworld, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. There we go. Mm-hmm. I think we're onto something here.
There
we go. We will be back.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
For some reason in this country, and in most of the Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeenPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the Freedom Fiends, reminding you that Barack Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
David Cameron is a ridiculous human being.
Unless he's a robot, and then he's a ridiculous robot.
And or lizard.
And or lizard. A lizard robot.
I think you're onto something there. Is that kind of transhumanism, but for animals?
Yeah, it's you take the mind of a reptile, you put it into an android, and then it runs for office.
Okay, it's, you just came up with that, or you've thought about this?
Trans reptilism.
Oh, who doesn't love a bit of trans reptilism?
Yeah.
We were actually looking at a list of the 50 most racist movies, and we've been surprised by some of these. Some of them are racist, but
a lot of them aren't. A lot of them are kind of anti-racist. Like, a lot of them have racist themes because the whole point is that they're trying to shed light on racism. Like, but Gremlins was number 50. That was how I came across this list. And Birth of a Nation is number one, which I think it rightfully deserves because it's about the origin of the KKK and it's sort of a propaganda piece. But I was shocked that Planet of the Apes is number three. Like, I get it. Like you know, Charlton Heston is a white guy, and all of the apes are, they're not African-American actors, but they're all wearing ape masks, and apes are dark-skinned. But, like, it is a movie about racism. It's a movie about showing the folly of the racism in this culture of chimpanzees and gorillas and orangutans and their racism. Like, so... I feel like they're missing the point a lot of the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I don't know. I think it's just... What I think it is I think, like, there's some of these movies, yeah, definitely, like you said, that are racist, like, that are sort of pro-KKK and things like that. And then there's some that people are just, you know, taking out of context, and it's also so easy just to, like, to find things. I mean, there it's, I don't know what the justification is. There it's a Pulp Fiction, but it kind of moved away. I don't know what's so racist about Pulp Fiction, to be honest. I don't remember there being anything particularly that I thought was racist. Falling Down is apparently racist. I loved that movie, Falling Down. You know, the one with, what's his name? Michael Douglas, when he's just an ordinary guy, but he's just snapped. And it's all just basically one day of him walking about on a rampage. Have you ever seen it?
Sorry, what's the name of it?
Falling Down.
Falling Down. That sounds familiar. Let me see if I've got it in here. It sounds like something I've seen.
Yeah, man, it's brilliant. It's Michael Douglas, and he's like this kind of button down guy. Yeah, and then he just loses.
It's like Breaking Bad, right? Like, he's this straight-laced guy that just suddenly goes nuts.
Yeah, he just loses it, and it's so good. And he says things that some people are thinking, like when he goes into the fast food restaurant and, like, they give him, like, the terrible looking burger, and it's like, they only make one good one for the picture, and then they give you this, you know, and, like, he's got... It's just, like, it's weird as well how, like, he survives a drive-by shooting by accident and then ends up with, like, a big bag of guns and stuff. It's really bizarre as a movie. But what's weird and interspersed into all the mindless violence, there is, like, this whole idea of someone who's sort of, for whatever reason, has lost his wife and his child, and he's just finally cracked and he just can't take it anymore, which is really interesting, man.
I mean, that's almost a white trope, isn't it? The idea of the straight-laced guy who breaks and brings a gun into the office, isn't that kind of always a white guy?
So then are we saying then that this is a racist film because it's racist against this white guy?
Well, no, that's not what the writer is saying. The writer is saying that it's a Caucasian violent fantasy against Korean deli owners and Latino gangbangers, because I guess the people he's mad at aren't white, but I don't know.
But then, is that just the neighborhood that he lives in? You know, are there neighborhoods like that? Then if there are, I mean, I don't know. That's maybe what, in LA or something. I mean, I don't know. I've never been there. But if there are neighborhoods that are like that and he happens to be in one, then is that not just a depiction of somewhere that really exists? What makes that racist? Do you know what
I mean? Yeah, I don't know. One of these are just like totally... I've never thought of this before, but some of these are our theme, right? Like jungle to jungle, or up in the air, or like white guy visits black society. And that seems like that's a common theme in film. I don't know if it's racist, but it's definitely a tired trope.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go watch Gremlins again. I think that's what I'm going to do tonight.
I'm going to go to work, Davy, so, you know... They've been working about half an hour. Yeah, lucky you.
Well, thank you for your service.
Yes, thank you for your service, sir.
You know?
It's been a good show. It's been fun.
For sure.
And if we decide to untie Michael Dean, we'll let you know.
I don't know. I think we could go a couple of shows without him. What do you think?
Maybe. I don't know. He's looking angry. He set his cat army on us. I'm waiting for it.